gentlemen, boys and girls, pets and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment and shenanigans alike, welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
And I'm John the Lobster. Pierce Brosnan was always going to play James Bond, but it took a while for everything to come together. The Broccolis wanted Brosnan to take over after Roger Moore left the franchise, but he was tied to his successful Remington Steele TV series. After two turns with Timothy Dalton, 007's License to Kill was once again up for renewal, but it took 5 years of legal wrangling and studio mergers to get the house in order for Brosnan to finally don the chamois leather holster and Walther PPK. The first Bond movie not to be based on an Ian Fleming story, GoldenEye was a huge hit, grossing more than Dalton's two flicks combined. Directed by Martin Campbell, who would return to introduce a new Bond with Casino Royale, and introducing Judi Dench as M, GoldenEye also spawned a hit video game that might be more popular than the movie. Brosnan went on to play Bond three more times, but never quite achieved the acclaim he received for his first outing. Now, 25 years after its release, we're choosing our characters, turning on paintball mode, and playing a few rounds in the facility to celebrate GoldenEye. I call odd job.
Screw that. We're going grenade launchers in the temple. Yes. I am killing you.
Yes.
I was a master at this game because you could play it on four-person split screen. Yep. So I would not only be hunting you through the temple, I would also be glancing at your screen to know what wall I could bounce it off of.
Yes. So dirty. like a chameleon, your eyes were going in a couple different directions at once so you could keep track of everything. The muscle memory of that game is like still with me. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Just those abilities that you talked about, like being able to time the location, the bounce, the timer on the grenade, like you knew how long you had. Like, it was amazing.
The fact that what it did for first-person multiplayer shooters.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, even the single-player story was great.
But nobody remembers that. Like,
I
actually remember the deathmatch.
Because I played a lot. I mean, I played a lot of the deathmatch, but I played a lot of that. So there were parts in this movie that I completely forgot. But as soon as they walked into like a set piece, I was like, this is such and such a level.
When they're in the archive with the bookcases.
I mean, come on. It's so iconic. This is, wow.
What we forget is the GoldenEye game did not come out until 1997. So it was 2 years after this movie. And I think that speaks more to the fact that this movie kind of lived in people's memories for a couple years. The next one, Tomorrow Never Dies, didn't come out till 1998. So you had this three-year gap. But everybody thinks of GoldenEye the game as a movie tie-in, but it wasn't. It didn't come out for 2 years.
That's crazy.
After the movie was released. So to that, like it had to kind of live in everyone's memories. And this movie was a big deal. This was the return of James Bond and perhaps the first truly modern Bond movie.
Well, yeah, they gave him a BMW, duh.
Right. So product placement aside, this was Bond being updated to the post-Cold War era, right? So the vision of James Bond in Ian Fleming had always been as a Cold Warrior, as, you know, fighting these proxy wars between Her Majesty's Secret Service and Spectre or Smersh, depending on which version of the story. And you know, it really kind of was wedded to the Cold War. And I really felt that this movie does a good job of bringing you up to speed. First off, it starts with a flashback, right? So you're still in the Cold War. And we meet 006, right? A brother in arms to James Bond.
Dies always in the beginning. Oh, wait.
Always in the beginning, yeah. Sean Bean, you know, he's not going to stick around. But he comes back. But I think what's so great about GoldenEye is that it brings you up to speed in the opening titles because they're literally destroying the Soviet Union. Well, I should say bikini-clad women are destroying the Soviet Union, or at least the iconography. And then you update to sort of the post-Cold War free Russia. So there's a lot of stuff in there. And then you realize that not everyone is so keen on the idea of James Bond.
Well, he's a secret agent that's going to tear everything down. I mean,
he's a relic.
Yeah, I mean, he's all for country. He doesn't want anything for himself.
So I want to dial back into your memory and feelings about this movie, because if I recall, you're not a fan of the Brosnan.
No, it's weird. I mean, most Bond is just... I don't want to say it doesn't do it for me, because it does. It's they're fun. They're interesting movies because, I mean, it's got everything I should like, right? Spies, attractive women, gadgets, I mean, action, espionage. But there's just something about most Bond flicks that don't... I don't know if it's because Bond always comes off a little bit too douchey, or like M said, you know, like you're a chauvinistic relic of the Cold War or relic of the past. He's always posing. Every time he gets to the top or the bottom of a ladder, when he whips out his gun, especially in this one because it's Brosnan's first role at it.
He's a good-looking guy.
He's a very good-looking guy, but he's always posing with the gun up in the Bond pose every time.
Yes. Yeah.
Like,
no one actually walks around like that holding a gun.
Exactly.
If you are actually someone who is part of your job is carrying a gun, that is not how you hold it.
Right. And, I mean, so it's a little shit like that that irks me. I still have fun with this one, but... Like I told you in pre-show, I was like, I kept going, isn't this the one where the car's invisible? And then I'm like, no, that one was way worse than this one.
Yeah. So, I mean, here's the thing about Pierce Brosnan, though. It's diminishing returns, right? Each successive Brosnan Bond movie is worse than the one before.
Okay.
And I think that this one is the best. I think that Tomorrow Never Dies is okay. I think that The World Is Not Enough, then you're getting into the really sketchy territory. Remember, that's Denise Richards as Christmas Jones, as the Bond girl slash nuclear scientist, right?
Yeah, but...
And then you get to Invisible Car territory, where...
Okay, so that was the last one.
And that's the last one, right? Which, on the face of it, maybe even the first half of that movie isn't bad. It's just when they get to Invisible Car territory, you're like, okay, okay.
See, though, the way I look at it is, I mean, Christmas Jones or whatever the hell her name is.
Yes.
Right now you're talking...
I thought Christmas only came once a year.
Oh, God. But right now, stop it.
That's the line.
I know it is. I know it is. Well, Christmas in July. But now, or June, or whenever. God.
Whoa.
Now, you know, though,
June out of it.
Stop it. The whole on a top bit with, like, the horribly thick, not good at all Russian accent. Sure. And, I mean, Boris. They couldn't have picked one fucking Russian person for this movie. I don't think there is one. Is there?
No, not really. Some of the Russian military guys are... Isabella Scorporo is Italian, right?
Yeah.
Alan Cumming is Scottish.
Okay, so, I mean, at least they got some people.
I mean, even James Bond is Irish, so, you know, they don't quite nail...
That's a little bit closer to the accent realm.
Famke Janssen is probably the closest, because I think she's Dutch, or
potentially... Yeah, but her accent's the worst.
Yes, yeah.
Jean
Grey.
I love her. She's a beautiful woman.
Sure.
But in this, it's like, it's so over the top that it's, I don't know. It's like irritating. I mean, I like the whole, we steal the hardened helicopter so we can steal the secret weapon and
get away.
Right.
And then we're going to use the one off and cover our tracks, and then use the second one to melt down London. And
I mean, it's all good things. It's all things we see again later in, like, Die Hard with a Vengeance and shit like that. I mean,
sure.
Maybe not all of it, but I don't know. Just something about the, like, greater Bonds. I have more fun watching them and kind of ripping on them with love, you know?
Sure.
Because I grew up with the Sean Connery ones and shit, so.
And I think there's, this one is kind of straddling the line. It's not quite the camp of Moonraker.
No.
It's not quite the grittiness of Dalton, but it's somewhere in the middle. It is definitely playing at being urbane and sophisticated. It is also playing at being a little campy. The Q scene in particular,
oh my God,
is just nonstop gag, right? You know, just one sight gag after another.
Yeah, phone booth, car, all that shit.
Yep.
The pen.
Don't eat that. That's my lunch.
The pen at the end.
Yes. But also, that's a great Chekhov's pen because that pays off in such a great way at the end where it's Boris with his obsessive compulsive clicking that ends up being the undoing, like the switcheroo.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, that is good. Just. Damn it, 006.
006. Let's talk about the idea of having a brother against brother matchup for
the last like 5 minutes or whatever, that fight scene, but the hand-to-hand fight scene between the two of them I thought was very good. That
it's
was choreographed.
It's very well done because they have the same training,
well,
right?
Well, that's what you think and you hope, but this, I mean, mid-90s or whatever, I don't think they really thought of that a lot, so I'm glad they did here, because yes, same training, same background, same everything,
right? And they share everything, absolutely everything.
That was a like dirty I'm gonna share your lady friend line, wasn't it?
Yes,
yeah, see,
yes, yep,
didn't age very well.
No, parts of it did not,
but again, I mean, I can look past a lot of that. It's the era and the art of the time. I mean, you're always gonna have douchebags that aren't politically correct even in a completely fine society.
The other, I guess, thing to kind of consider with this one is the lead Bond woman, who is played by the beautiful Isabella Scorupco, and Natalia, is very much anti-everything that Bond seems to stand for, right? She doesn't like violence. She doesn't like
destroying vehicles
or being in vehicles as they are being destroyed. She kind of has a bad
prude.
So that leaves a bad taste in her mouth. That's not all. But she's very much like kind of an anti-Bond, but she's also badass in her own right, right? She's an experienced computer programmer who everyone kind of discounts that she doesn't know anything. But she's the only one who has everything figured out right from the start.
Yeah, and she could have done it all on her own, really. Didn't even need Bond to blow up the facility. She crashed the thing into the atmosphere.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that was fun. I like, and again, this is 95, so this might have been a prototype for, you know, strong, independent women kicking ass next to dudes. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
I could be wrong, but
also the choice of making M a woman.
Like that
inspired,
a lot.
Inspired by true events. So right around the time they were writing the movie, the new head of MI5 was in fact a woman. So that was incorporated into the film.
That's cool.
They liked Judi Dench so much, they keep her when they reboot and Daniel Craig takes over.
I do like that. I do like his first outing, Casino Royale.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about the direction by Martin Campbell of building this movie as both a homage to classic Bond. He starts out in a car chase in the Aston Martin DB5, and then updating it to the 20th century, or late 20th century with, as you said, a BMW, but also what is perhaps the greatest car chase in all of Bondom, and he's not even in a car, he's in a damn tank.
So great. So great when he goes in that tank. My mom owns that Beamer, by the way.
That's a nice car.
Nice little shark-looking thing. Yeah, she got it a couple of years ago.
I was always a fan of the car, the BMW from from Die Another Day, or no, from The World Is Not Enough. That's a sedan. It's not a convertible.
I'll see you're being a gentleman and pouring bourbon into a glass to just taking a shot out of the bottle. Cheers.
Okay. Yeah, cheers. Absolutely.
I'm from Wisconsin, goddammit. No, I mean, Bond has never slouched on cars or women, guns or gadgets.
Or suits or watches.
Right, suits. I mean, there is so much awesome in Bond movies. Mm-hmm. I think my brain is just like, it's too much. Or there's like the camp overflows, or I just remember like the ones from the 80s with like the rockets coming out of the car. And like, I mean,
I forgot that a major sequence in this film is about her going in and testing computers. Like, yes. In the little store.
I have to go do this. I want to buy all of these. I want to buy 50. Issues?
The only complaint is your interruption. Sorry. Hagrid is in this movie.
Who?
Robbie Coltrane as Valentin Dmitrievich Zukovsky. Also, Minnie Driver in a cameo as Irina the singer.
I wondered who that was.
Definitely a famous person. Can we talk about this idea that James Bond has a former nemesis who now is kind of an ally?
Which one? The guy he heard his gun and he called it out, and then he had a guy hiding behind the curtain? Yes. Uh-huh,
yep. He shot him in the leg.
Well, yeah, you should be thanking my aim. I mean, I did not hit the bigger part of you.
I didn't hit the rest of you, which, fatty, come on.
Right.
Okay, James, geez, wow.
Don't make again, it personal. Body shaming, 95, they had no idea.
No, it's not cool. It is not cool, for sure. Yeah, so, listen, on the face of it, I think this is the best of the Brosnan Bond movies. It is probably top five James Bond movies for me overall, up there with classics like Goldfinger, because it has gold in it. I think, let's see, there are four Bond movies with gold in the title, right? Goldfinger, Man with the Golden Gun, GoldenEye, and Goldmember? Oh, no, wait. That's...
Don't figure Goldipus. Don't figure that one.
Yes. Oh, that's my little golden pussy. and, of course, comparing it with some of the Daniel Craig movies, very much kind of in the same vein. So... Yeah, Skyfall, for sure.
You know, I might have liked this a long time ago, or a lot more a long time ago, but I think then I saw Daniel Craig in the first Casino Royale, and I was like, all right, I get it again. There's my Bond.
That's your Bond.
That's okay, my Bond, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not saying Pierce Brosnan isn't a dashing man and could totally be a spy.
Sure.
But...
And you like the Thomas Crown Affair more. Remember when we did that with Brosnan?
Oh, I love that movie. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, it's nothing about his suaveness Bond ability, if you will. It's just something about sometimes the Bond movies can get like overload of everything, and then it's so campy and I'm going to bang three women in this movie and it's okay. Mm-hmm. Bring a date to it.
Sure. Absolutely. Right? That's what these movies are about, right?
I guess.
How much, though, is our nostalgia for this, to bring it full circle, how much is our nostalgia for this driven by our love of the game?
Me, I don't even remember the movie, like I told you before the show. Okay. And like, I've only seen the movie maybe four or five times in my life, if that.
Yeah.
It was the game. The game is all of it. I mean, some of those sets, like I said, the end set, the opening set, the inside the Golden Eye room, the on top of the Area Seabowl telescope, it's like all instantly burned into my brain and really horrible, semi-awesome for their time graphics.
So I have to recommend that everyone download Golden Eye Source. This is a free game. Like, you can get this for no money. You just have to download the Source engine from Steam, and then you can download GoldenEye Source, S-O-U-R-C-E. This is for PC, for your personal computer. And this is a faithful remake of the game, all of the original weapons, all of the original levels, plus some new fun ones, including Casino Royale.
Source is a total mod conversion developed using Valve's Source engine. GoldenEye, yep. Oh my God, yeah, everything. Yep.
So basically what Half-Life 2 ran on,
yep.
You're playing, and it is so much fun. I got into this a couple of years ago, and it's one of those games I just keep on my computer and play whenever the mood strikes me. And you can set up bots or set up, I guess, LAN parties, I guess, if you want, things like that. But super fun.
I need to do this for sure.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a way we could figure out to play against each other. We would just have to create a server and things like that. But
we'll get together and pwn some noobs.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely check out GoldenEye Source if you have a hankering for the nostalgia. I know that they did a remaster on Wii, which was fun, but not, again, not the same as the original. And also, like, and this is current news breaking as of today, after much...
You
know, sort of deterioration, and they were trying to fix it, and it wasn't working.
Two massive issues in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, the Arecibo Telescope in Puerto Rico, the scene of the movie's climax, has been decommissioned and has, I guess, collapsed, ending its 57-year run. Interestingly enough, it's not a man-made crater. It was built in a sinkhole. A natural occurring feature that they built the dish in and used as a radio telescope.
It's a 900-ton instrument platform suspended above the dish, busted loose, and came down. That's absolutely
sad. And Sean Bean was there that day and crushed to death.
Bummer. Sean, we should hang our head. Sean Bean passed away, too. I did Ned watch Stark. It last night.
Ned Stark? Oh, no.
Right.
You watched what last night?
This movie.
Oh, GoldenEye. I see.
Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, never mind.
Yeah. It happened basically as you were watching the movie, is what you're
right.
saying.
Right. Sean Bean is now dead again.
You synced up the collapse of the Arecibo telescope to its actual collapse in the movie.
Again, not my fault.
Okay. I still blame you.
Thanks. Most people do.
And an interesting bit of trivia, the name GoldenEye, again, this was the first Bond movie not to really be inspired by Ian Fleming's story. License to Kill mashed together some parts of existing stories with an original title. The last sort of one before that was The Living Daylights. I'm nerding out about James Bond. Sorry about that. The name GoldenEye comes from Ian Fleming's real-life estate in Jamaica, which he named after Operation GoldenEye, which he helped plan during World War II, when he was part of the Naval Intelligence Division. So, in a way, and this has been explored in some other media, Ian Fleming was almost a real-life James Bond in a way, and he took a lot of that experiences that he had working in naval intelligence and tied them into the James Bond stories that he wrote, along with Bond's actual rank, which is as naval commander.
Well, he's a general.
Mm-hmm. He's a commander.
No, I meant, didn't she say?
I like he's an admiral.
Or admiral.
I always appreciate a lady who can pull rank. That's not all she's pulling.
No, tugging his rank.
Lowering his torpedo.
And never mind. Shall we do the thing, or do you got some more nerding to do? I know you do.
No, I'm ready to go. Well, Quantum of Solace is actually the name of a Ian Fleming short story featuring James Bond sort of tangentially, and they totally like made up a new story to go with it, but... Skyfall is made up. Anyway, No Time to Die is made up. But all right, let's rate this.
This pen is a class 4 grenade. 3 clicks arms the 4-second fuse. Another 3 disarms it. 4 clicks and it writes a rating for this movie. Us for GoldenEye, yes. Are we going legendary?
On a top of the list.
Legend of its time.
For England.
Cult legend.
I am invincible.
Awesome.
Now pay attention, 007.
Entertaining.
Boys with toys.
Mayable.
Slappers only.
Ugh. Forgettable.
A sexist, misogynist dinosaur.
Abysmal.
Shaken and disturbed.
Spring Breakers D&D.
Guess I'll die another day.
With a side of nostalgia, guilty pleasure, tingle, barf, tears.
With a side of N64.
Oh, I love it. Did you play Perfect Dark too, the upgraded weird version?
I never played Perfect Dark, but that was kind of the spiritual sequel, right?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Okay.
All right. So I, caramba. Again, you've heard it. I don't really do Bond movies. I don't know why. I don't know what. I mean, I was 15. This should have been right. Something that I absolutely loved. Should have and
been
watched.
Right there, dude.
I'd seen it a couple times. It wasn't till 64, GoldenEye, that I really fell in love with this franchise. So I got to say, I mean, entertaining. It's almost mayable. It's not anything like he does wrong or anything wrong with the story. It's just all of it. I don't know. So yeah, I guess entertaining, solid side of 64. Pierce Brosnan's first outing is not bad. I like the Italian chick playing the Russian. The other beautiful chick, Miss X-Men herself, Famke Janssen, is... Sure. Horrible at her accent,
but she's totally your type, dude.
She is. She's totally my type, but just that accent is like, I love her from everything else, but it's like, if you got a girlfriend that all of a sudden shows up one day, or your crush, and she's just playing a horrible accent, it's kind of a turnoff.
Got it.
So yeah, that's my rating. What about you, sir?
I have to go with Legend of Its Time. I for figured. England.
For England.
Yeah.
For you England, showed your hand in the group meet before.
Me, yeah. No, I really think this is the best of the Pierce Brosnan films. It's probably the best we'd seen. I mean, The Living Daylights is okay, but for me, it's the best one since For Your Eyes Only. And up until the best we would have until Casino Royale. So it's basically the best Bond movie out of two decades worth of Bond movies.
So it's the island of hope in the middle of some crap.
I mean, it really is. It really revives the franchise, right? Which was really kind of not looking like it would continue. So we had kind of this drought for 5 or 6 years with no Bond movies, MGM and Eon Productions and all of the studios that were responsible for making this film were going into bankruptcy and mergers and all sorts of trouble. And it looked for a long time like we were just done with Bond movies. It wasn't a thing that was ever going to happen again. And all of a sudden, they put this movie together. It's a huge hit at the box office. It revives interest in spy movies in general. And a couple years later, we get sort of a reinvention with Jason Bourne. And that goes on and impacts where the Bond franchise goes in the future. Because it basically, like, remember we had Jason Bourne and Die Another Day almost in the same year, right? So that's two very different interpretations of spy. I'm going off on another tangent here. Oh my gosh.
I'm letting you because I'm searching some other stuff. So wrap it up.
I just really think that this is a highlight in the Bond franchise in general. Again, I would put it in top five. Certainly the game itself makes this like full on legendary. If you played the game and you loved this movie, you had a good 90s.
Last word on GoldenEye.
Boom. What's the sound like? Boing, boom, like boom. It's like a very like metallic sort of.
Speaking boom. Of that, the aliens took the monument back, the monolith back.
And it went to. It's now in Romania.
Oh my God! Mind blown.
Yeah, no, it's in Romania. I read that today.
Okay.
Okay. I guess that means, Beef, what time is it?
Nose time.
plus beef.
We did.
All right. Anybody go to the movies?
Apparently a lot.
Really? A lot?
Well, I mean, a lot more than, like, five times more than anybody's gone to see anything else recently.
Yeah. So we had The Croods 2, The Croods A New Age. I don't even know what that means. I don't remember Croods 1, but this is 14 million over a 5-day Thanksgiving weekend. 14 million in 5 days.
That's a movie.
Yeah. It's something. The next highest grossing film doesn't beat $1 million. Like, it's under $1 million. It's $7.99. I don't know anymore. I don't know.
Should we be happy for them, or are they infecting people? I mean, I'm confused. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing too. It's like, is having movies open helping, right? Is it helping anyone, or is it just making it worse? And that's kind of the thing that I'm trying to reckon with, and I don't think it's helping.
I reckon you might be right.
It's not helping the movie industry, right? They're not making any money. Look at these numbers. They're not making any money. Hell, in number 9th and 10th and 7th place are re-releases of old Christmas movies. It's basically movies you can watch at home, but go to the theater and infect people or get infected. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't understand it. But I get Tenant in 15 days from day of recording.
I am excited for that. We may, depending on how that looks, we may talk about it this year. I don't know.
Or early next year. Might be part of the
January. Early next year.
Might be part of the January. Might be in the
January. I thought we weren't going to do January. We might not do
that's
January.
That's fine. Whatever. Something's going to happen. We'll do.
So something might happen.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned. Let's talk about our top five news stories for the week. I am excited to confirm that Mads Mikkelsen will replace Johnny Depp officially as Grindelwald in Fantastic Beasts 3.
Hey, you have a real accent all of a sudden.
Grindelwald. Vald.
No, cool. I think that'll be cool.
Oh, he'll have a real, European accent. Right. Right. So, what, like, much better actor?
Yeah.
Maybe?
I think so.
Remember when he played a James Bond villain?
Barely. I remember when he played Hannibal. That's what I remember him from.
Remember when he was he stripped James Bond naked and beat his balls with a rope?
Balls through a chair. Yes, I do remember the ball beating through the chair.
Yeah, the ball. He's a real ball buster.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to stand for the rest of the cast.
Yes, awkwardly. Okay. Number 4, I guess, goes to you.
Oh, for sure, for sure. This is Joss Whedon kind of strangely exits the HBO series The Nevers. This is something that HBO purchased from him, like, direct to Ping Pong two and a half years ago.
Right. So,
and he was going to be, like, the writer, producer, showrunner, everything. Yeah.
Yep.
And, it sounds... I'm wondering if he's not having a kid or something. But it says...
Well...
This year of unprecedented...
Let me... Where to begin? So I have a theory behind this. And it ties into our last story.
Which is also at the brink of an exciting change. His own life.
Okay. First off, I know I put Joss Whedon's statement in the notes. But what also happened at the same time was HBO released a statement saying, we have parted ways with Joss Whedon. Okay? That is what HBO said. We have parted ways. Here's what you have to understand, and we've talked about a little bit how HBO and Warner Brothers is under new management, and this was a big reason why, after so long, they got rid of Johnny Depp, allowing Mads Mikkelsen to take over as Grindelwald, right? Joss Whedon has been under investigation for the past few weeks based off of Ray Fisher's claims of toxic work environment and racism on the set of the reshoots of Justice League. Everybody with me so far?
Okay, trying to keep up.
Okay, so remember that when Joss Whedon took over for Zack Snyder, he brought in his trademark Joss Whedon style and may or may not have been a huge asshole to members of the cast that he didn't particularly click with, including Ray Fisher, who kind of started this whole thing. Ray Fisher played Cyborg, got this whole thing rolling, and for the past couple weeks, Warner Brothers has been investigating Ray Fisher's claims, talking to people in the cast and in the production to kind of get to the bottom of what really went down. Meanwhile, Joss Whedon is developing a new show for HBO, which is also owned by Warner Brothers and AT&T as their parent corporation, and then suddenly asked or told or suggested that he leave the show he created, which hasn't even started filming yet.
Okay.
So this leads me to think that he basically got the Johnny Depp offer. We recognize that you need to go. We're not going to make a big deal about it. We're just asking you to leave. Go quietly, and we won't make this awkward. And Joss Whedon put out his own statement saying, I'm tired. And HBO said, we've parted ways.
But exciting new changes in his life.
Well, I'm sure, because now he gets to probably defend that, no, he's not an asshole and a racist, which everyone kind of already thinks he might be.
I guess he's going to be skating uphill.
Yeah. So that is story number four. Thank you for introducing that. I know I kind of took over. So I'll just tell you that Disney, in story number three, is going to lay off 32,000 employees from their parks.
In the first half of 2021.
In the first half,
I mean, I guess, yeah, why not start small, right, Disney?
Yeah, I just think that they're really waiting for whatever is going to happen so that we can reopen theme parks and things like that. So we need a vaccine that's for theaters, for live sports, for concerts, theme parks, just gatherings in general. We need a vaccine.
All right. In our final Quibi sucks corner.
Well, potentially. Like, I keep thinking, like, this will rear its ugly head again, and we'll have another Quibi sucks corner.
Yeah, but okay. Well, our final one for a moment, anyways. Officially, as of right meow recording, Quibi, the app, is done. You cannot log into it. You can't watch anything. It will stay on your phone until you delete it, but it is done, gone, kaput. They say that this was buried in everybody else coming out, right? I read this article. Yeah, thank you for highlighting that. Less than 7 months, April 6th. But it came out right at the beginning of the freaking ping pong. And it was up against with Disney Plus, HBO, Peacock. So it gets that horrible, opponents to go up against. But the bigger thing is no one was doing, like you said, the commutes. No one was on the train or the bus for 20 minutes so they could watch two of these. If you were going anywhere, you were driving, and it was like a war zone out there, and you just wanted to get to work.
Yeah.
So it didn't just die because of the competition. There were numerous factors which killed Quibi.
Or it died because nobody wanted to watch it.
Well, I mean, that is the main part, but it had underlying issues as well.
I mean, they basically, like, I was all in on Quibi as a concept until I actually looked at it, and I was like, yeah, there's nothing on there I really want to watch, at least not in the format they were going to present, 15-minute chunks, things like that. Also, I have YouTube, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they're saying, too.
Watch content.
Everybody goes there, and it's free.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a bummer, but it's also not a surprise. 7 months after launch, they're done.
No, it's shit. Well, because almost eight.
It's almost as though we could explain it with a hashtag.
Hashtag Quibi sucks.
Hashtag, all right, are you ready for this? Hashtag Quibi
sucked.
They did, past tense.
No, they're still sucking somewhere. Something's going on. They're draining someone's battery.
Yeah, for sure. All right, number one story, and I don't really, there really isn't much to say about this, but in sort of the latest saga of will a big movie go to streaming, Netflix made a $200 million-plus bid for Godzilla versus King Kong. But again, we're back to Warner Brothers. They may have plans for the pick on HBO Max, the same way they are doing with Wonder Woman 1984.
It's going to drive subscribers for sure.
Is Godzilla versus King Kong a movie that, should they release it into theaters, it would do well?
Yes, but it all depends come, I think it was March, May. When is this supposed to come out? I read it somewhere. Anyways, it's supposed to come out next year in theaters.
Originally it was May 21st, Memorial Day 2021.
Yeah, so, I mean, depending upon where we're at, if they release it both at the same time, I mean, if there's a vaccine and people are being safe, maybe. But I don't know, man. I can... by then, I will have purchased a fucking projector. You know, I mean, if this is, if the other one's coming out,
you will own your own drive-in theater.
Yeah, right. Well, in my basement. Drive into my basement. But I like this. I like the other one. Or Kong Skull Island, I really liked. So.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, these movies. I wasn't a big fan of the first Godzilla movie. I liked Kong Skull Island. Yep. I watched King of the Monsters basically for Mothra. Like, I was literally only there for Mothra.
I played with my phone too much when I watched that one, King of the Monsters.
And this one, I'm like, yes, but I have watched all of the Godzilla movies and Kong movies to date on my computer. So I was probably going to be okay with watching Godzilla versus Kong the same way.
True that.
So here we are.
Some quick hits, honorable and dishonorable mentions.
Okay, you have to appreciate this one. So a bug in the Spider-Man Miles Morales PlayStation game gave us a web-swinging patio lamp, the hero we deserve.
I think this is so great. And there's so many other ones, too, but that's probably one of the best.
I mean, we have all by now seen the ubiquitous patio heater. Because outdoor dining has become much more of a thing, and they are a fixture of our lives now, and I think they are the protector of New York City.
Oh, absolutely. But they, I mean, bugs aren't going to happen in games. It's just funny that this one is a freaking outdoor patio heater.
And it's got to be in Spider-Verse 2. Come on.
Oh, that'd be great.
Also, sad news, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse leaves Netflix Christmas Day.
Oh my gosh, I almost got sad for a second, then I remember I own it until Vudu.
That's right,
until
physical media, baby!
Nope, until Vudu decides to take it back, and then I buy it.
Oh no,
and then
I have to buy it in physical media.
Shut up,
I know, I know, I know. I have the Blu-ray. Peter, all right, Peter.
No,
No, you.
Peter Dinklage will star in the reboot of The Toxic Avenger, one of my favorite movies that I shouldn't have been watching from my childhood.
Oh no, yeah, same. But I'm excited for this casting, although I have questions. I don't care.
I have lots of questions, but I don't care either. I'm wondering if he'll be, you know, himself and then go through the thing and then be someone else, or if he's, I don't know.
Like he'll get taller?
Yeah, or something. Yes.
Or is he just the voice and it's CGI? And
oh, maybe. I don't know. Mo-cap. I'm excited for that.
They're bringing back some of the Troma producers, is what I heard, too. So that'll be cool.
Very cool.
David Lynch is developing a new project, a TV miniseries called Wisteria for Netflix, now in production. People are speculating, is it a Twin Peaks follow-up? We haven't heard anything official yet.
I don't know, but this, that man has a great hairline.
He sure does. This story was shared by Shark Taco, shared it with us.
And they are both huge fans of the Twin Peaks. Kevin Smith announces Jay and Silent Bob's secret stash is moving just down the road.
Just down the street in Red Bank, New Jersey.
It's our comic book shop, people. Come on.
It is a comic book shop. And finally, sad news, we have to report that David Prowse, the actor who physically embodied Darth Vader in the original Star Wars trilogy, has died age 85.
He was huge.
He was a large man.
Yeah, I didn't know how big he was. And I saw pictures of him back in his bodybuilding days, and it's like Jiminy Christmases.
And no wonder they cast him to play the bad guy.
Yeah.
But also no wonder they put a helmet on him.
Yep. I mean, you know, that happens.
Okay, we have some trailers to dump on you. First off is I Hate Susie, a TV series coming to HBO Max.
We know this woman, don't we?
We do. That is Billy Piper.
I knew it.
Rose Tyler from Doctor Who, the first couple modern seasons.
I think this looks great. She gets busted, like, having an affair or something, and it's all the fallout and drama. This looks, I mean, I don't know, it looks funny and interesting, and yeah. What'd you think?
I'm into this. This is available now on HBO Max, so I may have to queue that up on my Amazon Fire TV stick.
Ooh, look at you. I'm writing it down on my list.
Watching on my TV. I Hate Susie. Okay, also coming to HBO Max in December, Heaven's Gate, The Cult of Cults.
Coming out Thursday, December 3rd. This looks amazing. I know what I'm doing this week. Thursday.
You're watching the four-part miniseries, Heaven's Gate, The Cult of Cults?
At least the first part of it, yes, for sure.
Okay.
I remember this because, obviously I lived through it, but the...
Oh, you remember?
I was. The G looks like the Green Bay G. It's like they stole our font.
Oh, bastards.
I know.
Good thing they killed themselves.
Whoa, hey, I did not condone Lobster's statement. I do not condone suicide or recommend it upon anyone.
No, absolutely not. I retract. All right, House of Ho.
Looks kind of like Krasians.
Go ahead. Krasians, reality TV show.
Yeah, it looks like a Krasians reality TV show.
Yes.
Some of it looked intriguing, but some of it just looked so over the top that I kind of was like, eh.
You know, the Real Housewives, they have the Real Housewives of, you know, Houston and things like that. So would you say this is the real... Go ahead.
Housewives?
Crazy Rich.
Crazy Rich Ho Housewives? I don't...
Of the real Krasians of Houston?
Oh, sure. I don't know. Again, this is just weird. It seems...
It's a little trashier than our normal fare.
Yeah, very exploitative in a way.
Yeah. Okay, so we did get a full trailer for Doctor Who, Revolution of the Daleks.
Oh, yeah.
And a release date, New Year's Day, from BBC.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready for this.
Oh, yeah.
This is a Friday, so I get to watch it Friday and Saturday.
Nice security drones there.
Yeah, absolutely. Come on, people. You've never seen a Dalek?
All right, so movies you can watch at home. The first one is a documentary. Again, this one trailer was shared with us by Shark Taco, and this is The Last Blockbuster.
This looks fun. I mean, we've done stories about this blockbuster, this island in the sea, for a long time now, and it sounds like they're dying, unfortunately.
Even the former head of Blockbuster, like corporate, said, I don't miss going to a store to pick out a movie. Does anybody?
Well, they talked about what you guys always talk about, how long before till they stop making DVDs even.
Mm-hmm.
So, this looks good.
It's a real thing, yeah.
I know, I got to start buying more. I got to start listening to you again.
Yes. The Prom, coming to Netflix. A musical?
No. I'm not a big musical person.
Okay, so this is about a true story. So, a girl in, I think, Missouri... was going to ask to go to the prom with her girlfriend, and rather than say yes, the school canceled the entire prom.
That is douchey.
And then this is kind of a celebrities show up and save the day, which I don't think happened.
I was just about to say, did they actually show up and save the day?
Yeah, I don't think Meryl Streep and James Corden, et cetera, showed up. But, you know, I remember this story, but... I think this is a fictionalized account.
The next one from Universal called Our Friend looks really good, or at least it looks like touching and heartfelt and fun and not fun. Yeah, some parts aren't fun.
Sure. So this is about a woman who is dying of cancer, played by Dakota Johnson, and her husband, played by Casey Affleck, and his best friend, played by Jason Segel, Jason Segel's character ends up moving in with them to help care for their family, and it looks heartwarming and touching.
Were they, see, I thought they were all like friends from like college or something, and then the other two got married.
But yeah, yeah. Okay. But yeah, he's our friend. They're our friend.
No, looks really good. Looks, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. So, movies coming to theaters eventually. Well, one already is in theaters, and you can watch it at home, but I'll save that one for last because it looks good. Clifford the Big Red Dog is the bad trailer of the week.
Yeah, the Tom and Jerry or the...
yeah, the giant fake CGI puppy.
Not cool.
Not cool, man, right? Like, it just looks bad. Like, I know that a red dog isn't really realistic, but it doesn't look like a dog at all.
No, it looks like a big animal. Like, big, just, I don't know. Not good. But the next
Paramount,
one. The next
the
one.
The Donut King. Yeah. The Donut King.
This is like a rags to riches back to rags because he gambled it all away. Uh-huh. And yeah. This looks fun.
All true. Bit true documentary, The Donut King. He is a Cambodian immigrant, and he ends up making donut shops all over California and the surrounding area, and brings over hundreds of refugees and helps build them new lives. And yeah, but then gambles away all his money.
One point in time was worth $20 million and lost it all.
Yeah, yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah. But I definitely have to see this. This is on the short list for the weekend.
And I love donuts.
Doesn't everybody?
Right. All right, so we've talked about what we will be watching maybe soon. What have we been watching in the past week?
Like, oh my God, Tina, I finished Fargo season 4.
I heard this crazy twist at the end. Don't spoil it.
Why would I spoil it? This is spoiler-free review.
Oh, thank you.
And there is no twist. I don't know what you speak of.
Okay.
Discovery season 3, I'm cruising along there. I'm only a few episodes in, but I really like it. It's weird and fun.
Uh-huh.
Mando. I mean, Mando.
Uh-huh.
Fucking Mando.
Uh-huh.
Tentacles.
Spoilers.
Right. Tentacles.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Then, a cute little show we've talked about a few times with the voice of Harley Quinn on HBO Max called The Flight Attendant was on.
Mm-hmm.
And
how is this?
They had the first 3 episodes, mm-hmm. and I watched them all. And it's pretty damn good. It's not what I thought it was going to be. It's funny and weird, yeah. and it's confusing because she doesn't know what's going on. But I think it's worth a watch.
So this is kind of like, it starts off as, it's Kaley Cuoco, who played Penny on Big Bang Theory. She is a flight attendant. She's kind of a hard partying girl, living the good life, carefree. And then someone done a murder, right?
Yep, someone done a murder. Then, might be her, might not be her.
Right, and then things go from there.
It's honestly, it's a train wreck you can't look away from because every choice she makes, you're like, shouldn't be doing that, shouldn't be, oh. And then sometimes she makes good choices and she surprises you, but back onto the bad choice train. It's fun. 3 episodes are out now and Thursdays drop the new one.
Nice.
Murder on Middle Beach. I am at the end of the 3rd episode. We only have 1 more. I have no fucking idea who did it. They keep pointing me in different directions, and they all seem plausible. And I'm sad that this kid has had to do this about his own mother's murder. But this is something that is, again, HBO Max is paying for itself. Yeah. The D.B. Cooper documentary is now live on HBO Max as well.
And?
Awesome. 4 different people. Or 4 different stories of people that all could be D.B. Cooper.
Okay.
It's amazing. The plausibility of it, it's freaky. And then Archer season 11, or the most recent one, I was looking for something to kill a half hour yesterday, and I ended up watching 3 episodes before bed. So it's back. It's Archer's still good and fun.
Good.
Okay. Very
good.
What about you, sir?
Well, okay, so The Mandalorian.
I know. Right?
So that's got to be the top show of the week for me. I just thought that this last episode was great. I know that there are divisions about how people feel about certain things. This episode didn't make everyone happy, but it was never going to make everyone happy. You were always going to be upset that a certain character was called a certain something, or a certain character was played by a certain actor who was not somebody else. And, you know, it's converting something from live action to real, you know, from animation to live action is never perfect. They aren't going to nail it 100% of the time. I think Bo-Katan, they did a great job because it was Katie Sackhoff. You could have Katie Sackhoff play that character and it would work. I think this one was, you know, a little bit harder, but I think they did good. They did right by the character, right? And that's what matters.
Absolutely. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Not really, because I think everybody knew that was in this episode. The other stuff that I won't say was mind-blowing and awesome, and I can't wait for that character who they name drop to be on the show.
Now.
We'll talk. Yeah, right away. We'll talk maybe about who we think could play that person, because I think that one will be somewhere where I don't think it'll be the person who voices it in the animated. It'll be someone that can live up to the character's literary history. Spoiler alert. Okay, Great British Baking Show on Netflix just had their final. It was great. Oh, wait, sorry. I was almost going to say who won, but then that would be a spoiler. So, awesome. Supermarket Sweep on ABC has been consistently fun. I mainlined Rick and Morty Season 4 on HBO Max.
Did it not get better the second half?
I thought it was consistent all the way through. I liked some of the meta commentary from the earlier season episodes. But then when they kind of got back to the story, which I kind of forgot from the last season, I was like, oh, yeah, this is all really good and intense. They do two time travel type episodes, which I know they said they wouldn't do time travel. But I'm really excited about these two time travel episodes, and I kind of want to incorporate them in my time travel class. Specifically, the I bet you couldn't make a save point in real life episode.
Oh, with Morty?
Yeah.
I love and hate that one.
That one is so well done that it's just everything I talk about in my class of like the ethics of time travel, that it would really kind of mess stuff up, right?
Yeah, no, I'm like getting all teary like thinking about him and that.
Yeah, it's kind of like Palm Springs, where it's like, just because you did it in another timeline, you still did it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and then they make the consequences real, and it's really important. So, we also have been watching Hallmark movies, kind of just having fun with those. Watch the National Dog Show, or whatever it's called, on Thanksgiving. That was kind of the highlight of the day there. I correctly picked the winner of most categories and Best in Show. So, I was pretty excited with my score sheet. And then the movie Happiest Season on Hulu. This is the romantic Christmas comedy with Kay Stu, Kristen Stewart, and Mackenzie Davis as girlfriend and girlfriend who go to their...
The straight family house.
Right, the straight family house, and then they don't know that Mackenzie Davis is a lesbian, and it goes from there. It's oh shit, I keep dropping stuff off my desk. I'm so sorry, listeners. It is really... I'm not going to say it's like a great movie, but it's so like standard rom-com fare that it's just nice. A great cast, solid recommend for this one. This one has also inspired a lot of debate online about some of the choices the characters make, which I love that people are talking not only about the movie, but also saying like we don't think this movie is perfect, or we think this movie is perfect, and then having a honest debate about it, I think is really good. So I recommend Beef. I know holiday rom-coms might not be your thing, but you should check that one out.
All right, I will add it to the short list. All right. Next time, Legends Podcast, a Christmas movie. Not the Christmas movie. Yeah, but a Christmas movie. We have two on the list. We won't tell you what two. It'll be a surprise.
Yeah, we're trying to set up a guest for
tell you it'll be one of either two. It'll either be National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation or Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
So you're either going to get Shane Black or John Hughes. You're either going to get Robert Downey Jr. or Chevy Chase. You're either going to get a guest host who's somebody awesome or just us schmucks, but it'll still be good.
Have a comment, question, recommendation? Email us at legendspodcasts@gmail.com with an extra S for Soviet satellites. This has been episode 501 of Legends 007. Podcast. Wait, what?
007.
Oh, 501 007. I don't think that's how it works. This has been episode 501 of Legends Podcast. I'm Beef saying, grenade launchers in the temple. I win.
Okay. Only if we can turn on big heads.
Sure, that's creepy, though.
No, I loved it. Oh. GoldenEye Source, check it out. It's so good.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. You can also send us an email to legendspodcasts@gmail.com. That is podcast plural. For all our contact information as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com. You can also visit legendspodcast.com where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on the show is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at incomputech.com. The opinions on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legendstream Canada or Gunna Geek. No infringement is intended.